Welcome to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. This podcast explores what it means to make life less difficult for each other and for ourselves. We share stories of struggles and successes because we believe sharing our stories eases the difficulty of life. I'm Lisa Tilstra, your host. Let's jump into today's conversation. My guest today is Miranda Holder. Miranda is a returning guest to the podcast after being with me on the podcast in February of 2022. That was on episode 38, which I highly recommend you listen to if you have not. We recently reconnected and Miranda was kind enough to be willing to turn our catch up into another podcast conversation, and I am so grateful. Miranda has many, many, many amazing stories. One of her amazing stories includes starting her career as an endurance athlete and at 25 finding herself training for the US Olympic rowing team. It was actually during that time that she discovered she had a congenital heart condition and she had to abruptly end her career as an athlete. She transitioned to coaching and served as the head coach for the Georgetown University's women's rowing team. But finding herself burned out after about 10 years, Miranda transitioned again, this time to leadership coaching. For more on those stories, please do listen in to episode 38, which was published back on February 4, 2022. Miranda now runs her own company and focuses much of her coaching work on somatics or embodied coaching. If you're not sure exactly what that means, stay tuned because it's what we explore and dig into for most of our conversation today. And I find it deeply intriguing and meaningful and thought-provoking. As we explore the embodied work that Miranda does, she shares incredibly generously from her own journey. I gained some beautiful insights about my journey that have been really enriching for me that I've been continuing to contemplate since we talked. And I'm so grateful for those insights that I've walked away from in this conversation. Miranda, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing with amazing authenticity, generosity, and warmth. I can't wait until the day that we are neighbors. It's going to be a lot of fun. Miranda, welcome back to the Make Life Less Difficult podcast.
Oh my God, Lisa, thank you so much for having me again.
It's so cool to connect with you. We were just chatting and then decided to hit record because, you know, why wait? You're back. The first time we had a podcast conversation, it was released in February of 2022. It was episode 38. And I'm so excited to get to spend this time with you.
I'm excited to be here, be back with you. As I've mentioned before, I sort of wish you lived closer to me so we could hang out. So this is the next best thing. So I'll take it.
One of these days it's going to happen. I have quoted you innumerable times. The phrase that I learned from you that stands out the most, and so many people have heard me say it and use it, is structured emergence. And I know you don't claim that for your own, but that's I attribute it to you, and I'm so grateful for that. And it's so cool how it just sort of like gives people permission to step into this space of exploration.
Yeah, that's why his work resonated so much for me. And he's not the only one out there doing it. I was just listening to a Coaches Rising podcast with Nicholas Johnny, I think, or Yanni. Talking about he didn't call it structured emergence, but a very similar concept of, you know, you have to be where you are to figure out where you're going to go. And very few people are willing to do that. They want to talk about where they want to go and how they're going to get there. And being where you are feels like the last piece of that. And that's actually the beginning.
So true. And full disclosure to those listening today, we actually have deemed this is our conversation today is unstructured emergence, which I am equally excited about, maybe even more so.
Same.
So what you just said, let me go back to that. Being where we are.
Yeah. Being present, which I know that phrase gets thrown around enough times that it makes me want to throw up a little in my mouth when I say it. Because of how sort of overly familiar it is. And it's just true. It's like, I think about if you were planning a road trip, trying to get to California and you didn't know which state you were in to start, I'm on the East Coast. So I'm thinking about a really long trip across the United States. Hard to plan that trip if you don't know. Are you starting in Vermont? Are you starting in DC? Are you starting in Florida?
Are you starting in Sri Lanka? I mean, for that matter.
I know. Are you starting in Antarctica? Like, really different? You need to make different moves to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think is, what makes it so difficult for us as humans? Because it seems to be a common human challenge.
Well, this is just my perspective. And I think often it's really painful where we are. And at least I guess I noticed that because when I'm inviting people to be in their bodies, I noticed that for some people that feels like a relief. And for other people that feels even can be unsafe. It can be dangerous, or it can be revealing to a really disruptive or painful degree. Like if I invite you into your body and one of the things that lives in your body is how unhappy you are in your marriage, you have to face that if you go into your body, or if you just really loathe your job, or, you know, whatever thing, there can be a lot there. And when you ask people to, or you invite them to be present, they have to face that. And it's easier typically for us to numb and be busy and to disconnect from that.
Yeah. Miranda, will you say more about what you mean when you invite somebody into their body? I think in the coaching world, the idea of, you know, embodied coaching, embodied presence is becoming more and more well known. But for those that don't live in the space of coaching development, it's sometimes like it just sounds a little strange to invite someone into their body. So I'd love to hear you say more about what that actually means.
Yeah, what it means is that I've just noticed, and part of how I learned how to do this is I grew up as a really sensitive kid, and still I'm a really sensitive adult. And I think starting in college, especially and into my 20s, I very much went up into my head to kind of manage, went to a really academic school and just kind of, I think it's a very typical to kind of go up into your brain to begin to be an adult in a lot of ways, because being an adult often requires a lot of, you know, foresight, planning, prediction, and then making a lot of decisions as a result, which is what your brain is really good for. Your brain is this amazing prediction machine. And so if you want to study, if you want to save money, if you want to make a plan, in a lot of ways, you need your brain to do that. I needed to come back down into my body to include the wisdom of my body in the whole intelligence of my being. So it's not just my brain. It's my brain that lives all over my body. So I, first and foremost, I need this more than anyone else, which is why I practice it and why I do it and why I'm insatiably curious about it. And so when I invite someone into their body, I'm simply inviting them to access their whole brain or another aspect of themselves or their brain. And that might be something as subtle and as simple as they're talking a lot. And I'll just say, hold on, just take a deep breath in and out and pause. And what do you notice? Or it might be a guiding, grounding or centering practice at the beginning of our session, or facilitated exercise that I do with a client or with a group of individuals. But essentially, I'm asking them to feel, and not just feel their emotions, but feel their physical sensations. I often think about it like, I imagine for myself, I've got my awareness, and it's like a spelunker going down into a cave. And so it's my awareness dropping down, coming down, climbing down my vertebrae into my ribs, down into my body to just be present and feel. What do I feel? What's the temperature? Where is there tension or expansion? What's grabbing my attention? What's being loud? What's being quiet? What feels maybe numb or cut off? Just what sensation is there? So that can inform whatever is in front of me or whatever is in front of my clients.
I absolutely love that visual of the spelunker climbing down the vertebrae and looking around. and asking what's going on. Yeah. And I feel, so as you were describing that, I'm noticing a couple things. One is like distractive thoughts that start popping into my head, like, oh shoot, I forgot to do this earlier. Right. And then like coming back present and just that visualization of the spelunker. And it just kind of, there's just a relaxation in the coming back to the present moment and being here with you and letting go of that distractive thought that just wants to pop in and pull my attention and just be like, I'm here now.
Yeah. And I would even say you can welcome that thought. It's part of the present moment.
Mm.
It's because I think people often imagine like, oh, Miranda's asking me to be in some Zen state, and I'm not actually inviting anyone to be in any state at all other than aware. Mm-hmm. So if that means your head feels clogged and totally busy, like 18,000 planes flying around, you know, okay, be present to that. What does that feel like? What does it feel like to have that many thoughts in your brain? What thoughts are coming up? So it's not a, I've just switched my brain off and now I'm in this cool, relaxed place. It's like, no, just what is happening right now inside you? What can you feel? When I say feel, I mean, really a better word is sense, because feeling and emotions get conflated or used interchangeably. And what I mean is, what can you sense? Just what's the physiological, the physical feeling in your body, not the narrative or the label your brain has given it.
Hmm. That I like that a lot too. What do I sense in my body? Because sometimes I shut off the feeling. It's like, I don't feel anything. Okay, but what am I sensing? That opens it up to a different perspective.
Yeah, it's a deeper, deeper because it predates the emotion. Because what we've learned, like emotions, as I'm sure you know, they're learned, right? We know that anger looks like this and feels like this. We know joy looks like this and feels like this. And so when someone says, I feel anxious, say, well, what does anxious feel like in your body? It might feel different than what anxious feels like in my body. And sometimes people can answer that question. And sometimes that's a strange one for them. They haven't been asked that before. And it can be difficult or inaccessible or uncomfortable because they don't know how to answer it. Mm-hmm. But that's the beginning of developing that muscle of awareness.
Miranda, would you be willing to tell the story of how you have gotten connected with this embodied work, what it's done for you? I'm intrigued by your description of yourself as being a sensitive person and seeing that throughout your life. And I'm just very curious of how this journey unfolded for you.
Yeah, there's like any journey, right? There's so many steps. So I'm just kind of being with myself to figure out, okay, how do I want to tell this story?
Yeah.
And which parts feel important to include? What feels like a really big turning point was I joined David Drake's Narrative Coaching Program in 2019. And I'm pretty sure at the end of the certification process, he gave me one piece of feedback, which doesn't seem like a lot. And as you know, all it takes sometimes is one very important thing. And one of the things I had to submit it was a transcript of a coaching session with a client. And he observed that the client had been in a pretty emotional space, using emotional language. And I had kind of responded with a very heady, response or question. And it was like this arrow to my heart, like reading that feedback. I was like, oh, he's so right. Mm-hmm. Like this person was inviting, was sharing an emotional thing. And instead of being in the emotion with them, I was sitting there in coach mode trying to figure it out because, or at least I was taught, coaching is we were given exposure at Georgetown, where you and I both went, to somatics, and we were shown a lot of different approaches, but primarily the method is fairly cognitive, the standard. And so I was coming from that, and that was sort of my muscle of choice at that time. And so I was coming back at this client you know, trying to understand, trying to help, but from a very cognitive place. And that really shifted things for me, that awareness. And I would say things have been really different since that point. And David was also the person who taught me how to coach somatically, because he showed me what that could look like in a really different way. And it was like tapping into all this stuff I had always known my whole life, but didn't know. It was like I had this tool belt around my waist, but I had no awareness that it was there, and I had no idea how to use the tools. And so he gave me, you know, a lot of exposure to his work and showed me how to use those tools that I already had, my intuition, my deep sensitivity, my aware. I always had this feeling in sessions where I would be picking up on something that the client wouldn't be talking about, but I had no idea how to really bring that into the space or into the room in a skilled way. And so that really felt like a turning point, but there was stuff even happening long before that, where I was aware that the journey that I was on personally, which always extends professionally, of course, is being in my heart more and being in my body more and being less in my, I'm going to try to predict and control the world with my brain machine, where I feel like a lot of us live.
Because it can be nice to feel like I can predict and control the world, even though in reality I can't.
Feels nice.
That delusion feels so nice sometimes.
Yeah, but you know, it's so disappointing though when it doesn't work out.
Yes.
And maddening and a whole bunch of other things.
It's true. So with that insight and feedback from David at that point, where did you go?
Well, I continue to study under him, take his programs, even though he doesn't like that word. Because I felt like I had tapped into something really big and really important for me. And I wanted to keep studying it. It also felt like I hadn't quite gotten it the first time around. So I wanted to keep revisiting the work and practicing and strengthening these muscles. And I also got paired up with a really amazing person who became my coach, Adele Fedorak. And she is the wizard who pulled my stories out of me and helped me see that the story that I wanted to share with the world is around or is embodied intelligence and the power of embodied intelligence, which is just my fancy way of saying the whole body intelligence system, like trusting yourself, trusting what's inside you, in addition to your brain, not just your brain plus. So working with her, so I've been working with her for 2 years now, maybe more. And it's been really amazing what she's been able to draw out of me and what we've been able to do together. Because I always had this feeling like there was, and I'm using the word feeling on purpose, like this vague sense that there was something, there was a sort of a different expression of my gifts and abilities in the world, but I didn't really know what to do with that feeling or where to go with it. And she helped me explore it, pulled out a bunch of important stories to me. And among those stories, the one that I really wanted to focus on and felt called to was helping other people understand, like, what am I feeling? When I'm feeling stuff in my body, what am I feeling? And what do I do with that? And especially I wanted to understand the biology of it, the science of it, because it's kind of easy, even especially, and I know you know this, especially in the coaching space, because we're a little bit on the edges of things. Some of us can really love living in woo-woo land. And yeah, you can just be like, oh, it's like, I'm feeling this and it's magic sparkles. And I'm like, I know it's not magic, or maybe it's magic sparkles and it's something else too. What is that? And so I wanted to understand. So I went on a journey of kind of reading a lot, listening to a lot, trying to understand when I was feeling something in my body, when I felt led to ask a client something, or when I felt something, what the heck was going on inside my physiology, and could I trust it? And it turns out you can. And there's tons of science. Like, people have been talking about this. I'm not the first person. You know, people have been focused on this for like good long time. And indigenous populations and philosophers and poets and artists have been aware of this for all of time. And it was like a light bulb to me to connect. Like, this is not some unscientific or woo-woo way to live.
That part is very interesting to me. And I want to ask you to share more, partially because I think it helps for me. So it's interesting because I like magic. I can go down the magical path pretty easily. My husband sometimes gives me a hard time. And I just joke sometimes. I'm like, it's just magic. Okay. But I have been fascinated, as I am a extremely, extremely amateur reader. I will just say reader of some books having to do with quantum physics. And that shit is fascinating. And it's like, okay, this totally sounds like magic, but these are scientists that are saying these things and doing these things. So now, when anything feels too magical, I just tell my husband, it's quantum physics. It's quantum physics. but I think for me, it also, I've noticed as I've learned, you know, just, and again, I'm not a neuroscientist by any means, but what I have learned about neuroscience, it actually, I feel like I can partner more effectively with my brain as I understand this. So I am very, very much want to hear more about what you are learning, because I think like the scientific side of it, the physiological side of it is really fascinating and valuable. So I'll turn you loose. Where do you want to go from here?
Well, first of all, I just want to echo what you said and confirm it. I think it, the way, so I've created a course around this work, and I hope my intention is that it's enough information so that people who, because pretty much all of us come at this from such a brain-centric approach, it's enough for your brain to kind of be like, okay, this person's not crazy. I can relax. So your brain is like, okay, it's cool, guys. It's cool. All right. Yep. All right. I'll relax. I don't have to control this. So that you can go and have an experience, a different kind of experience. And so, I don't know, there's a bunch of different things, but one of the things that resonated for me the most as I was getting started was I've always experienced my own intuition, and that word means a lot of different things for a lot of different people. So I always hesitate to use it, and it's just the only word I really, that means the right thing for me. But that feeling inside my body that makes me want to go in one direction or the other, to say yes or to say no, to say this or to say that, that feeling has always, I've likened it, I've personified it. It feels like the quiet girl in the back of the classroom. Like, she's got an answer. She's not in the front, like, ooh, 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 I got, pick me. She's not pushy. She's not aggressive. She's just like, I've got the answer for you when you have a moment. I'm right here. And that's how she's always felt to me. And when I learned that the nerves inside, that are all inside your organs, for example, so deep inside your torso, like we talk about the gut being the second highest, you know, that's why we call it the second brain, it's the second highest innervated part of your body. Those nerves are actually physically smaller, and they're unmyelinated, which means the signals that we receive from them are quieter and harder to hear. And I was like,
that's interesting. So
that's what I was feeling. Like, it is harder to hear that voice. It's actually harder to hear. They're different from the nerves that are closer to your skin, that are in your muscles, and they communicate differently. Or the signal, we're receiving the signal in a different way.
Yeah.
That was one of them. Another one was this principle of what's called self-relevancy. So when you see an ultrasound of a baby in utero sucking its thumb, it doesn't have any awareness of, you know, its mouth, its hand. It doesn't know what's going on. And it knows it needs comfort in a moment. And it's found a way to bring its thumb to its mouth to receive comfort. And that principle of you know, feeling and being able to take care of yourself, to give yourself something that you need in a moment, is the same principle that we're feeling when we're, say, deciding between two or three different jobs and feeling drawn to one versus the other. It's the same loop. Like, it's our neurological system saying, this is what's going to help you. This is not. This is in alignment with your values. This is not. These are your people. These are not. It's just a more existential, philosophical, you know, bigger expression of that same ability to, like, right now I just need this physical touch. I need to be doing that kind of work to be happy and to be fulfilled. And that also, okay, so my body is giving me all this data that I'm simply choosing to ignore because I haven't been taught to trust it or understand it. And again, it's just like multiple, my head was exploding all the time.
Well, and I love what you just said about our bodies giving us data. And I think that's such a valuable way to look at it, especially if someone's not familiar with the embodied whatever, and it sounds a little out there. It's like, these are data points. And yes. I mean, I grew up in an environment where I was actively taught to distrust the data from my body. And, you know, like, not to trust ourselves. Feelings are untrustworthy. They come, I mean, and it was in a religious context. So it was even put to, like, feelings are evil, right? Like, deep inside, I was taught my heart is evil. And so I can't trust anything that comes from this sense of feeling. So it wasn't even just ignore, it was actively distrust.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And it's so interesting to notice the shift from in utero that you just described, where a baby is feeling something and just automatically responding in a physical way of sucking on their thumb. And I mean, when babies are infants, they, you know, hopefully in a loving, caring environment, get whatever their bodies need to, first of all, stay alive, but then find comfort and security and safety. And then somewhere along the line, we start saying, oh, wait, no, don't trust what your body's asking for or what your body's telling you. And it's an interesting, interesting perspective.
Yeah. And I do think it's complex in that what I'm not advocating is hedonism or reactivity, where you just say, oh, well, I felt like having, you know, 6 hours of television and a bag of Cheetos, which for me wouldn't make me feel good. Maybe that makes someone else feel good, and that's fine. It might feel good for a moment, but I know if I discern that that's going to make me feel good for a bit, but not truly good. It's not going to truly be nourishing. And I mean nourishing beyond even calories, like just nourishing my whole self. And so to me, an important piece of this is discernment, which is dropping inside your body, seeing what's there, and then learning your body's language, learning your own language, like what shows up. Because in our body, and I know you know this, we have bias that lives in our body. We have, you know, people are taught to hate other people or to dislike or distrust other people. And that is an embodied feeling and experience for them. Our cultural conditioning lives in our body. How many times has a woman looked down at her stomach or any part of her body and had a thought about it, or had a feeling about it,
mm-hmm.
that is something that's been given to her by the outside world?
Yeah.
And for that matter. But so all that stuff lives in there, as does all these old stories that we have, all these wounds that we have. And so to me, you've got to go in there and be with that stuff and learn what's there for you so that you can make a decision in a moment that's really right for you. That's not just, I'm reacting to this, like, oh, that guy cut me off in traffic, so I'm going to flip him off and scream because that's what my body wants to do in this moment. Yeah. It's like, actually, who do I want to be in the world? Is that the kind of person that I want to be? Or do I want to be the person who takes a deep breath and is like, well, that person's having a bad day or didn't see me or whatever, and I'm going to let it go. Or growl or whatever, but maybe not flip them off. But, you know, I know that's a trite example, but to me, it's, you got to be willing to go in and do that work. And that kind of coming full circle in our conversation already, it feels like you've got to be with what's there to discern.
So what's coming up for me, and, you know, when you talk about, it's not about the hedonistic side of, let me just do whatever I feel like doing because I can, and watch me. I mean, I think about some of those. Well, and it's not even just the behavior itself, right? Because I can choose to lay on the couch and watch 6 hours of Netflix, and there can be different reasons. So it's not just,
exactly,
just the behavior. It's
exactly,
am I doing this to suppress feeling something, or am I doing this because I'm truly noticing that I'm exhausted and I'm just going to give myself a total break.
Exactly. You nailed it.
How do we figure that out? Because that, I mean, it's one thing to sit here and say that, oh, it's not just the behavior, but there can be behaviors that, and I mean, one person could be stepping into behavior and it could be a positive thing for them, and the exact same behavior for somebody else is completely detrimental.
Yes, this is why it's so hard to judge other people and so hard to say what's right, because it's not just the behavior. It's why you can't just lump all behaviors into categories as good or bad, as easy as that seems.
Yeah.
So to me, it's practices, and those practices can look different for different people. And, you know, there are different ways of getting in touch with what those sort of pieces of you are. But I think at its, and I can go into them if that's the specifics that you want. I can tell you more about exercises or things that I've designed or done. But to me, a lot of it is like, if you don't on a regular basis, just stop and be still. And I don't mean like in a sitting on a meditation cushion for an hour a day, kind of. I just mean even for a few breaths or for a period of time, and notice, what am I feeling? And what does this remind me of? Does this remind me of something else? And what kind of patterns do I see or notice about myself? And kind of collect along the way. That's why I think of it like speaking your own language. It's like, when I first was learning how to speak Spanish in high school, you know, you've got a collection of words at first, right? And then eventually you're able to string words together and you're learning about verbs and conjugation, and you're being able to put together more. And, you know, initially it's just gathering these sensations. And then the more you gather them, the more, you know, familiarity and recognition you have of what shows up in your body and what's there, and whether or not you want to listen to that voice or whether you want to listen to a different one.
I like the analogy of learning a language, because it is, when I was talking to someone one time about the consciousness of learning, I'm learning French as an adult, and I'm very aware, right, of everything I don't know. Sometimes I'm aware of my mistakes, sometimes I'm not, right? But there's always somebody willing to point them out. And I was talking to someone who grew up multilingual, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, do you remember learning a language? And, you know, she was like, no, I don't even remember what it's like to learn a language. So, I mean, I resonate with that analogy, since I'm actively learning a language. And the language of being in tune with my body and the sensations and the message, like, it is a language. It's a language that I feel like I'm also learning. And I really like that lens to think about it as it's a language with myself that I certainly didn't learn growing up.
Yeah, me neither. And another way to think about it, if language doesn't resonate for everyone, is it's a relationship, right? Think of the little things that your partner does that you know what they mean, or at least you think you do, and probably you do, at least some of them. You recognize, because you know, after X number of days or weeks or months or years, you know this means grumpy, or this means angry, or this means happy, or whatever. This means something's going on. Maybe they want to talk about it. So to me, again, it's that it's time, and it's familiarity, and it's spending time with this aspect of you so that you can get to know it and so that it becomes familiar. And one of the beautiful things about it is that, to me, I find it really comforting. It feels like I've almost, and this might sound really corny, but it just is what it is. It feels like I have another friend. Like, it feels like I have like a place to go, somebody else to be with when I'm having a really hard time. And I have lots of wonderful, thank goodness, I have a lot of really wonderful people and places to go when I am having a hard time. And there's some times where I really only want to be with this other aspect of me. I want to be with, and again, I'm making it sound separate. It's not separate. Obviously, my body is me, right? It's just me. But talking about it that way makes me feel like I've got somewhere to go and can be comforted in these times that are difficult.
I like that. I like that. And it connects, for me, it connects to my journey of learning about self-compassion and developing a self-compassion practice and the difference that that's made in my life. And so much what I learned along that time, and the therapist that I was working with who introduced me to self-compassion, was, you know, connecting back to these things that I was taught as a kid that really came from a loving context. No one was trying to teach me things that were going to not be helpful. Like everything I was taught in like the religious sphere and everything, it was, I look at it and I'm like, oh, I mean, like there was really good intention. And yet, wow, this stuff is not helpful at this point in my life. And that place of self-compassion within myself, of learning I can be there for myself when it doesn't feel like anyone else is here for me. And it's been transformational for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I go because I live in Vermont, I go for a walk in the woods. And I love that very likely nobody will find me. Like, I'll be completely private and alone. And if I want to, you know, scream or cry, or it's been very little screaming, thankfully, but a lot of times a lot of crying, if there's a hard moment, you know, I can go off and be in a place where I feel really safe, and I can just kind of be with myself, and I will be talking to myself, which I know makes me sound like a lunatic, but to me, again, it's just like being in audible communion with myself, and I'm talking out whatever I need to say. And I'm also, you know, speaking to these other aspects of me that are, whether they're freaked out or they're, you know, whatever experience they're having, what I hope is the sort of best expression of me, which is always who I want to be driving the vehicle at any given time, the vehicle of myself, is to say, hey, like, I've got you. Yeah, you're afraid. Yeah, you're anxious. Yeah, this is really uncomfortable, or this is really whatever. And it's okay to be that way. And here's how we're going to deal with it. Or here's, you know, we're just going to let it out as we walk. And being able to have that space, I know, is a privilege. And it's so comforting to have that place to go. And I don't know how that sounds to other people. I can imagine like a younger version of myself being like, you are 100% a weirdo. But it is what it is. It's been really comforting.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many different thoughts and questions that I have, Miranda. I don't know where, which direction to go. I mean, one of the thoughts that comes up is, as you describe, going for a walk in the woods and being by yourself, nature comes up for me as as a partner on this journey.
Totally. Yep. No, I'm the Vermont stereotype. I will literally go and hug a tree sometimes.
Mm.
But I've back to my highly sensitive childhood, I started wandering in the woods as a kid. And that's where I first had an awareness. I grew up in a really religious family and was taught, you know, sort of formally about a Christian God. But to me, my first experience of something higher, bigger, outside of me, even if that's just the amazing system of nature, was being in the woods by myself. Mm-hmm. And so that is extremely comforting to me as well. And it feels like part of my, I call it my medicine, because if I am not moving and if I'm not outside and if I'm not pausing throughout the day, like I do not function very well at all. And again, I don't use that word medication lightly or medicine lightly. And I'm a full believer in Western medicine. I have an ICD implanted in my body, like thumbs up. And for me, the thing that I need every day are those things, because otherwise my brain and my being are very, very different. And I am a less pleasant person to be around and a less effective coach and partner and less loving mom if I don't give myself those things.
Mm-hmm. So can I just share some insights that just popped into my head about my own journey with you saying that? The past 2.5 years, we've lived in Colombo, Sri Lanka, and it's been tough for me living in the city, living in a high-rise apartment, and not having great access to nature in the way that I love to get out and walk and be in nature, kind of away from people. And I mean, it's fine, okay, if I'm on a trail and there's people and stuff, but more away, right? There's parks here in the city, but it doesn't have that away from all of the noise feel that I really desire being out in nature in the mountains. And I have struggled a little bit with how much I've struggled being here, because I'm very adaptable and I pride myself on being adaptable. And I mean, we've lived in the Philippines, we've lived in Saudi Arabia. I mean, surely Saudi Arabia was more challenging than living in Sri Lanka for a whole variety of reasons, right? I couldn't drive there and had to cover up and, you know, like all these things that were very unique there. And yet, like, this has been one of the most challenging places for me to live. And I haven't always been able to put my finger on it, but I've gotten to where I can articulate it more. And I live on the 49th floor of a high rise. I'm like, okay, never need to do this again. I have learned, and you know, the plants on my balcony are wonderful, but still just not really connecting. And so I've had a difficult time really articulating, well, why is it that this has been so difficult? There's a lot of similarities to living in Manila in the Philippines. That's a huge city. And I didn't have nature at my doorstep there as well, but I didn't have the same challenge. And so what my insight that I just had is that I think that I know that I am much more in tune with myself and listening to myself at this point in my life. And it's bringing up emotion for me as I say that, and kind of like, it's okay that this place is difficult for me to live. It's okay for me to actually really say, okay, well, I'm ready to move somewhere else where I have daily access to nature and in a very direct way in a different environment, and that it's this, well, it's partly because I'm more connected to me than I was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. So I don't know if all that makes sense, but it's a lovely insight for me.
Do you mind if I ask you what, you mentioned that emotion comes up. Do you mind if I ask you what comes up?
I mean, in a way, there's a sense of relief and acceptance that comes up for me because of just saying, hey, you know what? It's okay. I don't have to try to, I don't know. I've almost felt like I need to make excuses for myself. And it's not, I've said to my husband sometimes, like, it's not, I mean, it's not Sri Lanka. I mean, living in different countries, it's easy to compare. And this, I'm like, there's nothing I can pinpoint like here in this country, in this city exactly. And so it's hard to pinpoint. And I've struggled with it because I feel bad. I feel bad that I don't like it here more than I do. And I don't find more fulfillment here. And yeah, it's so I think there's a sense of relief that comes with this insight and some acceptance, or at least a step towards acceptance of like, okay, well, this is something good that I can continue to kind of reflect on and dig into and move towards an even more accepting space. But that feels nice.
Yeah, the other stuff just sounds like it reminds me actually of when people describe depression. And I was briefly depressed in my first trimester, which I didn't know was a thing. Like, you could be depressed. I heard about postnatal depression. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize you could be pregnant and depressed. And so I had a brief experience with it. And I was doing the same thing, rationalizing, like, I have no reason to be depressed. Mm-hmm. There's no reason. And that's not the way depression works. And depression, I'm not saying you're depressed, Lisa, to be clear, but simply that, like, there doesn't have to, like, it's one of the beautiful things about being in your body is you can go in there without reason, right? Like, the point is not to go in and figure it out necessarily. It's just to be with what is. And you've illustrated one of the biggest things that comes up for all of us, and I'm including myself in this because, as I know you know, as coaches, we don't stand on some pillar above our clients. We're not like, got it all figured out. I'm here. Maybe you can get here someday too. No.
Fellow sojourners on the path.
fellow traveler. And so this still comes up for me. There's certain things that I find really hard to release the story, the narrative, the judgment around. But like, we have all these judgments about our feelings. And it's like, when you put them aside, if you can, and you can with practice, to be like, well, what's really there? Because the judgment, the narrative, just like, you know, those blinders on horses, it just like, or an aperture on a camera, like, it just narrows the focus and you stop seeing what's there and you stop being able to be creative or expansive or allowing and accepting of what other truths might be there.
Yeah. Yes. And the other, I like how you just phrased that, the other truth that comes up for me is I've noticed living here, Sri Lanka is very close to the equator. It's hot and tropical and humid all year round. And I really miss the change of seasons. And it's been interesting. And I've been traveling Fairmont, so I've been able to like pop in on spring in Europe or fall back in the US, and I winter, and I'm just like, oh wow, I really miss that change. And again, I've wondered, why is it so prominent now? Because the Philippines, Saudi, I mean, the slight changes in season there, but not, you know, I love four distinct seasons. There's just something about that. And to give myself permission to just accept that and say, wow, there is something in me that resonates deeply with those changing seasons and what it represents, and that I find quite fulfilling and engaging.
Yeah. So you're just telling me you're going to come move to Vermont when you're done?
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, we can end the podcast conversation.
Yeah.
success.
Yeah. My plan is complete. Yeah, I get it. And I only realized moving up here how, because I did live in cities for so long. And I think one of the things that allowed me to handle it or tolerate it was I got out in the water for several hours every day, either as an athlete, as a rower, or as a coach. Yeah. And so it was a different kind of natural element, but it was like waters are trees and water are like two of my closest friends. Mm-hmm. And so I think being able to do that made a big difference.
Miranda, speaking of being an athlete, one of the questions that comes up for me in, you know, learning more about this work that you do with the body in this embodied sense and from this, I don't know, what do we say, from an emotional place, or I'm not sure if that's the right description. I want to contrast a little bit to you being an athlete earlier in your life, because obviously that has a lot to do with your body as well. And athletes have to be in tune to their body to a, in certain ways. And I'm just curious how, I don't have a really great question, but like, what are the connections? What were like the disconnections? I don't know, just go talk.
You're like, please take it over. Yeah, no, and that's such a good point. And I've talked about this a lot with one of my really good friends who she and I were both coming up through the assistant coaching ranks together. We met in Boston and she's now the head coach at Williams College. And we were talking about this a lot. And because, and this is a perfect expression of the distinction around discernment versus hedonism with your body or versus just reactivity, because oftentimes as an athlete, you're having to do things to with your body that are profoundly uncomfortable, right? Yeah. So in some ways your body is like, what are you like? I mean, every time I was racing, my body was like, what the ever loving, what are we doing? Yeah. Like, I feel ill. My stomach feels nauseous. My legs feel like lead. My heart rate and my breathing feel completely different. And one of the gifts that my college coach gave me was understanding that those feelings were my body preparing for what it knew it was going to do, number one. So those helped me, you know, feel better on performance days, knowing my body was helping me prepare. So I was in relationship with it. And it actually, even though it felt uncomfortable, it was helping get me ready. And number two, it feels like the expression of, you know, to me, I use my body and I use this embodied intelligence to help people decide what's right for them, what's the next right thing for them to do. And oftentimes that does mean this is right for me and this will be profoundly uncomfortable or a little bit uncomfortable. It's not all bad, but sometimes it is this is right for me and this is going to be big and scary, or this is going to ask me to stretch and grow in this new way, or this means I'm going to have this really tough conversation that I don't really want to have. But this is the right thing for me to do. Or this is me letting go of something that I've relied on habitually, or a behavior that's really helped me get through, and I'm going to have to let go of that. And that's going to be uncomfortable. There's all sorts of ways that that can show up, but there's this, your body holds that sensation of rightness and it holds a sensation of discomfort, the just like biological discomfort of whatever a change looks like, right? So we're often outside our comfort zone, to use that phrase. That doesn't feel good. And there's still this, that's why I think about it like a compass. There's this indicator saying over here or over there or this or that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And how I feel now, because I think I've mentioned this to you before, like I hate, like loathe being the center of attention. Like I would much rather not, like to the point where like I don't, for a long time, I wasn't on social media. I don't want to put anything on the internet. I don't want to be out there in any kind of way where somebody could criticize me. And it's profoundly uncomfortable for me to put myself out into the world. And what feels clear in my body right now is that this my perspective on this is in some ways not unique at all, in that there's lots of other people studying this, talking about it, putting this work out of embodied intelligence, of somatics, of leveraging the wisdom of your body in the world. And I do have something unique to say. And for me not to say it, or not to live into my capacity in this way, this matters to me. It's important to me. I value it and I want to share it. And for me not to do that is to actually be greedy and hold on to something that's not mine to hold on to. It's not mine in the first place. Oh. It's coming through me. And so I can't hold on to it. So I've had to be pushed. I'm like in the throes of what feels like the labor of stretching myself in a lot of capacities that I haven't stretched into before. And they feel right. Mm-hmm. And it feels very similar to me to how I was as an athlete, where I was like, why did I decide to race an Olympian? This seems like a bad idea. Mm-hmm. What am I doing here?
Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful and powerful. And it's a moment where I feel I resonate a lot. And also feel like the words are insufficient to really describe this place. And I love to push myself physically and climb mountains that I know I'm going to be miserable on. And yet I love it too, right? And also stretching myself, even in doing this podcast. A couple of weeks ago, I did a monologue, and it was amazing because I've been doing this podcast for 2 years, and I was so nervous sitting down to do a monologue because I love these conversations, and so that's the majority of what I do. But I also had something that I really felt compelled to say and share, and yet I didn't know exactly how it was going to come out. And that feeling of like, I can't not do this. And yet it is really uncomfortable and worth doing. So yeah, there's a lot there.
Yeah. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I have another question for you. About a year and a half ago, I was in one of life's experiments. I like to experiment. And part of the experiment created a fair amount of anxiety for me. And I remember really distinctly one day being in the car and feeling this great anxiety. And I just stopped to notice and think, okay, like, well, what does this feel like? And my stomach was kind of in knots, and my throat felt tight, chest felt tight, and just all these physical responses. And then I had this moment of realizing that the same physical sensations can also be attached to falling in love. And I was thinking about, you know, like those first interactions with someone and the tightness and the butterflies. And it's so exciting, that feeling of being Twitter pated. And it was such an interesting revelation for myself to say, wow, these exact same physical sensations show up and they mean incredibly different things. And I would just love to hear your thoughts on that. And I don't know, is there somewhere to go with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you, because, you know, as a coach, right, the power of the narrative that we create, like those you can experience those sensations as anxiety or as falling in love. And the difference is not the biology. The difference is the narrative that you create and the context, right? So if you peel back your skin and look at your physical body and what's happening, the responses are the same. And how your brain or your being makes meaning of it, therein lies the power. So to me, that's why I think you've got to involve. This is not a chop your head off and leave it behind kind of situation. Like, oh, it should just all be a bunch of bodies like walking around, leaving our brains behind. It's like, oh, our brains are really helpful, but just like any tool, you've got to know its limits, right? Like, don't use a hammer if you really need a drill or a screwdriver. And so that's why I think that, and you had that ability in that moment. You demonstrated that, you demonstrated exactly what I'm talking about. Like, you stopped, you felt into your sensations, you felt into your body, you went into your body, and you kind of, you explored and you were present to what was there. And then you're kind of sorting through, like, am I falling in love? Am I don't know. Where did you land? Where'd you land in that inquiry?
Yeah, it's so interesting. There's a complexity to us humans. And on the other hand, there's a simplicity to us as well. I think some of this embodied work, in a way, there's such simplicity to it. And, you know, maybe it's the stories that I was taught that make it feel so much more complex than it needs to be.
I agree with you personally. That's one of the reasons I use it as a coach, is because I find that I work with really smart people, and I joke about this, but they don't need my brain. And it's not because I'm not smart or I couldn't be helpful that way. It's that they don't need another bit of gray matter in the room, in terms of, like, they don't need more information. Mm. You know, it's not like they haven't thought about all the different aspects. They don't need more prediction or help trying to, you know, gaze forward and try to predict what's going to happen. They don't necessarily know that they're coming to me for this, but part of what they're looking for is a different experience in the moment, to be able to shift out of whatever they're in, to see it differently, and then to be able to make a different choice. They don't feel stuck or whatever it is that they're feeling that's brought them there. And the body provides that. And it fills me with awe and wonder, because I, like you, I'm also really into magic, in the sense that I love being like, oh my God, it feels like magic. And I love knowing how it happens too, that when I invite someone to be still or to breathe in a different way, and then I say, what do you notice? What's here? Like, I had a client, you know, we were just doing a grounding practice at the beginning of a session, and I gave her that spelunker metaphor, and she went down in, and it was like, climb down the ladder of your body, and you know what's down there. And she noticed, she was like looking around, you know, in her mind's eye, and she couldn't turn to one direction in her mind's eye. Mm-hmm. We're like, that's interesting. Well, and so it's kind of a little bit of a guided meditation. So we're like, what's there? And she likens it to, you know, like cobwebs. And she's like, I can't, you know, I don't want to go over there. Long story short, the image that came up was a metaphor for where she is in her professional life. Hmm. And like, how did we get there? Like, I didn't ask her to get, you know, and sometimes I do, sometimes I ask people to give me a metaphor for your professional life. And that's a linguistic way in as well. And a beautiful one and an effective one. And we just went in a different way, different access point, and it gave us a lot of rich material to explore about where she is and what that symbolized and what came up for her around that, what it felt like. But that's the kind of stuff where I feel like it feels a little bit like surgery, where we can get like really deep right away, and we kind of bypass a lot of other stuff to get right to the heart of the matter, which is something I'm maybe problematically obsessed with, but there it is.
Problematically obsessed with, for, I would say, the sake of something very good.
Yes. And, you know this, right? We've got to be aware of ourselves as coaches and what we bring into the space. And that's part of why I do this work too, because I need to be aware of myself and what's mine and what's not mine. And so I keep my stuff to the side.
Yeah.
So if I'm caring about a change more than a client does, that doesn't belong there.
Yeah, so true. So true. So I have two questions for you. One is, I'd love to ask you to talk a little bit about the workshops that you're doing, which I have not been able to join yet because of living on the other side of the world. But once I'm living as your neighbor, I'll be in all of them. Watch out. You'll be like, Lisa, don't you need to go travel somewhere?
No.
But I'd love for you to share a little bit about those workshops and what someone, yeah, might, if someone's intrigued by what you're sharing, how they might connect and go a little bit deeper with you.
Yeah, well, lots of different ways, but I work one-on-one with clients. And then I have designed this course, which I'm running. It'll start in late May. For the seventh time, and I'm calling it Building Leadership Presence Through Embodied Intelligence. So I've had coaches in the course, I've had non-coaches in the course. It's what I love about this embodied work is that it feels very universal, and that you can come to it from a lot of different places and angles in your life. Like, you don't have to have a room full of coaches for it to be effective, or a room full of small business owners or first-time female CEOs or whatever you want to say, because what is the next right step for you on your leadership or personal journey will show up in the room. If you're quiet and you're with your body, what you need will come up. And it can also be really interesting to have cross-pollination with different people at different places in their careers or looking to do different things in a space together. So the course I offer is 6 90-minute sessions over 7 weeks, the break in between. It's over Zoom. And the goal is to help people understand, like, what is embodied intelligence? Why is this an actual, to me, cutting edge neuroscience, cutting edge biological approach to leadership? Like, right now, it feels like our mental, if we just do the mental model for change, or for leadership only, it's like using two fingers on a hand where we have five. Like, use the whole thing. Imagine if we could have a leader come into a room who can feel his or her own ego rising up and could make a different decision. And there's lots of mental models for that, but it's much quicker to feel that than to go up into your brain to have a cognitive awareness, and then to come back down into your body to make a different move. It's just more efficient to be like, oh, I can feel that. That's my blah, blah, blah thing coming up. And I've been practicing with my coach that in this moment, the way I want to show up looks like sitting back in my chair with my chest open and my arms relaxed so I can receive what my team is giving me, instead of, you know, shoulders hunched forward, chin jutted out, fingers in people's faces, telling them what they need to do.
I love that.
So the goal is to help them understand that, to learn to be with that more, to practice it so they have real life tools when they go back into, when they continue to live the rest of their lives, to be able to integrate those practices and hopefully shift things.
I love that. I'll put a link in the show notes if anybody wants to check that out. My second request for you, which we have not discussed ahead of time, so if your answer is no, we'll just edit this out and say a nice goodbye. But I'm wondering, some people might be ready to say thanks, see you later, and stop the podcast. But if somebody, I'm wondering, would you be willing to lead a brief embodiment experience before we conclude this, and if somebody is listening and is like, I'm out, please feel free to like go have a lovely rest of your day. But if somebody is intrigued and wants to step into this space a little bit, is that possible?
That is absolutely possible. Yes. Okay. And I'll give you one that we do in the course. There's three different layers of our sensing, right? We have our classic five senses, but those are really outside of our bodies. It's called exteroception. And then the next layer is proprioception, like our bodies in space. And then we've got interoception, like the internal sensation and feeling. So we're going to step through all three of those layers and see what that's like. You ready?
Awesome. Yes. Yeah.
So this is a different one in that you start with your eyes open. So and at least if you want to shift so you don't have to look at me while you're doing this, you can. But yeah. I'll invite everyone to start with their eyes open and just find a place where you can look in the space that you're in, where you can just rest your gaze. So you're not looking around. You're just letting your gaze rest on something. And then you're letting the visual of the room or the space that you're in come to you. Just letting the colors and the shapes and the light just come to you without kind of looking for anything. And I invite you to close your eyes. And again, not searching for these, but just letting the sounds come to you. Whatever subtle sounds are in your space or loud. And then noticing what you can smell. And what you can taste. What does the inside of your mouth taste like right now? And then what can you just feel? Where is your body? Where's your skin connected to itself? Like are your ankles crossed, or is one of your hands on your lap? Maybe you're feeling your inner upper arm against your side body. And then going one layer deeper, I invite you to start at the top of your head and just noticing where your head is in relation to your shoulder. So just almost like dripping down your awareness, letting it slowly come down. So is your head in front of your shoulders or behind or to the side? Where is your chin or your earlobes? Where are they in space relative to the rest of you? What are the shape that your shoulders are making? And where are they in relation to your spine? And we're not trying to change anything. We're not trying to shift. We're just building up a mental picture, if that's something you can do in your mind. Feeling the shape of your body. So where your elbows are, where your wrists are, where your fingertips are. And then coming down through your spine into your hips, noticing if you're seated, is there a little more pressure on one hip than the other? Is your whole pelvic bowl tilted forward or back or kind of in neutral? And where are your knees in relation to your hips? Your ankles? Your heel and all the way out to even your baby toes and your big toes. Where are they? Are they wider than your hips? Are they tucked in? If you're standing, is everything in alignment? And then we're going to go one layer deeper. And if you haven't changed how you're breathing now, if you'd like, I'll invite you into that. And just to breathe a little bit more deeply. And when I say deep, I mean deep into your belly. So letting your diaphragm just gently push into your stomach, letting your stomach float out. We're not trying to force anything. No, just kind of easily exploring, almost as if you could just filling up the balloon a little bit more. Creating a little more space inside your torso. And then what's here? What's around your heart? What's behind your shoulder blades? You drop into your gut, into your stomach. What's present there? Down into your hips, into your pelvis. And if at any point in time you get to a sensation or a place that doesn't feel comfortable, obviously you come right out. Again, just sensing without narrative, sensing without meaning making, just almost like you were cataloging sensations. What's there? What's the temperature? Where is there tension? Where is there openness? Sometimes we don't even have language for it, but even just sort of mentally touching that spot. I see you, I can't even describe it, but I see that, feel that, and being with it. And normally I'd say stay here as long as you want. So if you're listening to this and you feel like you're in a good place, you can just hit pause. You can stay in this quiet space as long as you want, but because we're on a podcast, I'm going to come out. What are you noticing, Lisa?
I feel lovely and in the moment. And I just appreciate the space. And I don't know how long it was, right? Like, relatively short, and there's a part of me like in that space, like going to that third level of just focusing on my breathing and space around my heart. It's almost like time expanded. Like, that could have been 15 minutes, it could have been an hour, I'm not really sure. And it's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Well, until we're neighbors, let's keep talking by Zoom and on podcasts.
I'll take it.
Thanks so much, Miranda.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's conversation and episode of the Make Life Less Difficult podcast. Editing is done by Joseph Burdock. Artwork is by Emma Burdock. I'd be honored if you took a moment to share this with a friend and or leave us a review. Together, I truly believe we can make life less difficult.